crafted from dirt. Fragile and human.
But then our lungs were filled with breath, sacred and shared.
Every last one of us, shaped by love.
Then stardust.
And here we are on a floating rock, trying to make sense of it all.
Our frailty and our perfections.
The primal and the eternal.
All of us, eternally accepted and divinely held.
Welcome to the intersection of it all, the bridge between the inner world and the outer.
A place where questions are welcome, a space of wonder. I feel excited.
I guess maybe it would be helpful for us to just talk about the origins of how we got here. And I think even that is a beautiful story in and of itself. You and I, Robin, have a group of collective great friends. Many of them are in the room right now, behind the camera, helping us out. I'm a middle-aged man now, that's for sure. And when I started really working on myself and being a little bit more intentional with who I want to be and intentional with some healing of my past story and just learning to be okay with who I am, my perfections and my flaws, and learning to hold space for them both and just be present and real and vulnerable. It seems like God automatically served up a group of friends for me in that same space. And I was like, here's some people working on themselves as well and being okay with who they are. You're going to be present for good or for bad, whatever that means. Here's a group of friends that have that exact same mindset. Just friends I can be myself around. I can arrive only as Jeremiah. I don't need to arrive as anyone other than just my raw and vulnerable self. And I was introduced to people who arrive as their real and vulnerable self. And eventually that group of friends led us together.
I love how we have our long-term friends and then these relationships come into your life at the right time to kind of carry us on to the next stage of our life. With me being an empty nester right now, there's so much that I've learned from being a mom of three children. I'm really at a vulnerable stage. And my husband and I have just embraced this time to try some new things and have fun and be with people like you that are where we are in life, like value the things that we value in life. These friends that you're talking about, they call me Aunt Robin. And I love it. It's so endearing. But I met them through a different project that actually traveled through three different relationships. So it was by happenstance that we ended up coming together. And then we found out that our conversations were so enjoyable, very strong in exploring our faith. And so it's just groups of people that I feel I can come to with open arms, nothing to prove, and just willing to discuss topics and conversations without offense, argument, high opinions, but always it's a safe, they're safe relationships to explore life, explore God, explore who I am in this time. I knew of you because we have a long history or affiliation with the same
Church?
Yes. Okay. Since it's where you work, I wanted you to be the one to say that. Yes. So I had known of you at church and the work that you had done there. And it's always been interesting because of what you do there.
I am proud of my church, and I'm proud of the heart that they allow me and my team to do what we do. And we have a large prison ministry, for lack of a better word. I fought that word ministry for some reason. I have a bunch of trigger words
which we'll get into that. There's good reasons.
Yeah, but for lack of a better word, it's a prison ministry, but it's just more of an open, welcoming community where we have over 1,000 incarcerated men and women across the state of Oklahoma, where we invite them into our community and ask if we can be invited into their community. And it's definitely been one of the more fulfilling projects that I've ever been associated with. They have done more for me than I could ever imagine doing for them in their spirit, in my spirit, and my understanding of God and my understanding of the inclusive, all-welcoming, hospitable nature of God. And I think that is the God that I've longed to fall in love with for most of my life, who I thought was inaccessible, and who I thought didn't want anything to do with me because of my quote unquote crimes, right? And I fought against that idea of God somewhere in my spirit. I had some. And we're going to get into our stories, and I'm sure some pieces will fall in place, which really is, by the way, one of the great benefits of exploring our stories and working on ourselves and revisiting our past and putting pieces together. One of the greatest benefits of doing that, which I have done a lot in my life over the last probably 7 or 8 years since I really got serious about wanting to be healed. And whenever we start revisiting our stories, which we all have stories worth revisiting. Whenever we revisit our stories, we're almost putting everything in the right shelf and connecting the dots. And I'll try to come up with other metaphors too. But
doing great.
You're doing great. Connecting the dots to see, oh, that makes sense why I am the person I am today. And it makes sense why I believe the things that I believe. And it makes sense why I have this view of God for most of my existence, even though somewhere in my gut, I was like, that's a very small, petty view of God that you're carrying around. And if we're not careful, we can carry around a small and petty view of God our entire lives. We can be on our deathbed surrendering ourselves to a small, narcissistic, you're in, you're out, cruel, judgmental God.
There is so much to what you're saying, Jeremiah, that has relevance because of the life you lived before that. So everything that you are saying carries experience. It's not just words. And so I'm excited for whoever listens to this to hear your story. But what I've heard you say so far is that you work for a prison ministry with the church that you're employed by. Am I correct to say that it's the largest prison ministry in our state, or?
Definitely in the state,
yeah.
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what you've found is that the relationships that you've developed with the inmates have been—
Incarcerated men and women.
Was that rude to say? No, help me. No. I don't know. I am so afraid of being offensive.
I say that all the time.
Okay,
and I get called out too. So I'm
thank
just,
you.
I'm just
I will
just
try to remember that.
Okay, I had a friend call me out the other day and I caught myself. I was like, inmates, incarcerated ladies and gentlemen. And she said, no, you You can call it. Well, we're inmates. I'm like, no, you're not.
So what makes the word, I don't mean to chase rabbit trails, but what makes the word inmate offensive or incorrect?
I think it's just a status that you're placing on a human being and soul who still has worth and value, and it, like,
okay, so
when you put a label on it, you're putting them just in a box.
So calling a person that is incarcerated, so I get it. It's like you're identifying somebody's mm-hmm. identity versus speaking of their circumstance mm-hmm. at the moment, like
yes.
a temporary versus. I wouldn't have even noticed that.
Yeah.
Like that's so. Thank you for making me more aware.
The only reason I notice is I've been burned in that area multiple times, and so it's okay.
Yeah. Well, I will retrain my brain in my 50s. Let's see how this works.
They've had lots of grace for me, and I'm passing that grace on
well,
to you. And I'll probably say it too one time.
I hope that your friends will have grace on me in that, too.
Oh, they will. I hope they're listening to this, by the way.
I am sure they will.
They can listen to podcasts. We got to figure that out.
I know the valuable relationships that you've developed, and that's one of the things that has inspired me even to be here. Like, I'm holding back tears, actually, because I know how much that you have wanted to love on the people that are incarcerated, and you only have so much time and so much energy. And so there's guilt. There's how much can I do? So that is one thing that motivates me to be sitting here behind a microphone in a camera is knowing that you have that you have relationships that you want to continue to foster in some way, that you have experiences that a majority of us don't have, and if they do, they feel seen and heard. And that's one thing that draws me to what you do. So the people that are incarcerated and the relationships that you develop, they have ministered, even though that holds some negative emotions for good reasons, they have ministered to your heart. Mm-hmm. And you said, I don't want to sound selfish, but there's nothing about you that's selfish. So that also says that you're in a good place doing what you do. We want to all benefit from our vocation.
We find meaning,
mm-hmm. yes, purpose, value. And you're seeing more of yourself in your story. Like you are starting to, you talked about healing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is such a valuable part of your story that will continue on. But here's what I want to focus on at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world it started for you? It's not like you filled out a job application, right?
The prison ministry?
Yes.
Well, eventually I had to.
Okay, yes. You got to go through the process.
But I got to write my own job description too, which was a treat. I never got to do that.
Yeah, this is good.
And we'll get into my story. Probably spend couple podcasts getting into my story. And then, of course, we're going to hear your story as well. So essentially, I'm sure I can connect these dots in my life where I've always had a heart for broken people, for a lack of a better word. I've always been attracted to be in relationship with those kind of on the margins of society, kind of the forgotten people, the people who got a bad shake at life, the people who were born into a certain circumstance. And
is this because it feels familiar to you in some capacity?
Probably. If we can start connecting the dots right now.
I
love that this podcast is just basically going to be, I'm on the therapist couch and Robin is going to be walking me. And I've just always had that in my heart. And I found myself at one point in my life, and we're going to get there, but at one point in my life, I did make the decision to go into professional ministry, which is odd considering my background. But I did make that decision, and I went to the whole seminary thing. I did the math one time, starting with my bachelor's, which was a religious degree. I was in some sort of religious degree program or seminary for 16 years.
Wow.
So,
and you continue to do things to learn and be, I mean, you're just a student of life.
No. Well, thank you.
It's, well, the evidence is there. It's clear.
I think you are too.
Yeah, it's true. It takes one to know one.
With my, all the screenshots in the group text, like Robin's learning right now. She's in the zone.
I don't know how to turn my brain off yet.
I don't know either. If you figure that out, let me know. You know, and I found myself, I was a seminary student, and I was working for a church, and nothing against this church. It works great for a lot of people. Personally, I felt very scripted, and I felt just kind of in a confined space. I was literally scripted. Like, I would get up on stage and read a script.
So that feels like theater. Mm-hmm. Is that too harsh of a word?
Yeah, it felt like theater to me.
Okay.
But again, and I hate to throw all these disclaimers out there, but I always have to. I understand that that church has been used by God to change a lot of people's life, and a lot of people have come to God through going through the doors of that church.
Well, just because it's not for you doesn't mean it's not for someone else. So I hear you not dismissing the church itself. I just hear you saying that it wasn't a good fit for you.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
You heard correctly.
Okay, good.
So, at one point, I got invited to go into prisons. There was a gentleman who was caught me in the hallway, and I knew he went into prison. I was kind of on a prison kick, and looking back, I think that this was God preparing me to be open to even, you know, it's not every day you're walking down the hall and someone says, "Hey, do you want to go to prison with me?" Right?
No.
So, I might have watched The Shawshank Redemption. I used to watch this documentary on MSNBC called Lock Up, and I was just, I don't know, when that was my thing on the side. And then when someone asked me, "Do you want to go into prison? Do you want to come with me as a volunteer?" I was open to it, and I jumped at the chance. We went out to a prison called Joseph Harp Correctional Center in Lexington, Oklahoma. The friend who invited me, his name was Tommy, and his wife, Karen, they were volunteering for, it was a Bible study. It was like I think they called it Silver Sneakers. It was for senior adults at this prison. So that was my introduction. Yeah, but while I was out there, I got pulled aside by this gentleman named Darren Elliott, who is incarcerated for life at Joseph Harp. And he was also, at that time, he was the young adults pastor for their church. I'm like, "Oh, you guys have a church out here?" And he started describing their church. And they have a church. They had a senior pastor. They had a board of elders. They had he was essentially the youth pastor. It was the young adults, which they considered 18 to 35. At that time, I was younger than 35, so that made me excited that I'm still a young adult.
Okay.
I could still go to youth group if I was at Joseph Harp Community Church, was the name of their church. And he just started telling me everything that God was doing on their yard, a bunch of positive life change stories. He started talking to me about how their church was organized, and I was pretty blown away. This is what I realized, and this is what I tell my volunteers now. This was one of the hardest lessons. Is like, when we go into prisons, we're not bringing God into prison. We're not. God is already there, and God is already working, and God is already changing lives. If we want to, we can go in there and join in with what God is already doing. God's not waiting on us to go into prisons. And, you know, this is just a microcosm. I'm talking about prison ministry specifically, but obviously I would love for all the church to adopt that mindset, that God's not waiting on us for God's will to be done. God's will is already going to be done. And if we choose to, we can come alongside and join in with what God is already doing. We can jump on God's team if we want to, but...
When you say that, because I know your story mm-hmm. that we haven't gotten into yet, mm-hmm. I just hear you, to me, the way it resonates with me, but the relationship that you, relationships that you foster at work, in your personal life, the way that you speak of your son, I know that you value relationships highly. One of the things that was automatic when my husband and I sat with you is just your humbleness in the way that you honor and respect people. And so even just by observing you and the way that you handle relationships as a male figure, I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot.
Aw. Well, thank you.
So, you know, even being with you, sitting there with my husband, sitting there with my boys, your son, this team, right now, the irony is that I have always been scared to death of men, mm-hmm. scared to death. Mm-hmm. There's good reasons for that, but I am learning how to have this sense of safety and honor and respect in these relationships like I haven't experienced before. And I look around with my nephews, with you all, with just the generation that's coming up, I am just seeing more compassion, a more desire for connection. Y'all have opened up a whole new world in my heart about just the need for people to feel this kind of safety and like a surrendered willingness to welcome more topics without offense and with a listening posture. You are impeccable at listening to people. It's more than what you hear with your ears. Like you take on a message with your heart, mind, and soul. I've been gifted, and I just want you to know that. And so elaborating a little bit, you know, like, as you had talked about kind of the scandal that you have with pastoring, with the word pastor, the subtle apprehension I have with around male figures has everything to do with my first memory, which we will go into as I tell my story. But my very first memory that has imprinted my 3-year-old brain mm-hmm. was... observing my mother and my biological father, and you'll know why I call him my biological father later, but my mother and my biological father having a physical altercation in the kitchen of our farmhouse when I was a little girl. And I and two other people, my brother and a young girl that was living with us that lived down the street. Her mom had cancer. She was living with us. But they were running and wrestling down the halls. And as a little girl, I'm just wanting to be with them. Like, where are you going? What's so exciting? You know, and I guess they heard the wrestling and they opened up the door to see what was through there. And I kind of snuck under them and saw, and it was horrifying. So I saw my mother being horribly and aggressively handled. And as far as I was concerned as a little girl, he was trying to make her disappear. Mm-hmm. So I ran out at that time, hugged my mom, cried, "Mommy, Mommy." And I remember my dad leaving the house. He left then. And my mother just... cradling and holding me and crying. I think then I assumed a role, you know, of being there for her in that way. But I also got a message that daddy's hurt their families. And that kind of became my desire. Mm-hmm. They say that my desire was to figure out how to please a daddy so that you don't get hurt. Mm-hmm. And they say that your relationship with your father also kind of fosters the relationship of how you think of God. And so there's a lot to be said there in my pursuance of a daughter's heart for that divine father. And so there's a lot of protective mechanisms that I have are cautious around bigness, cautious around, you know, strength, cautious around aggression, hostility. And so that is where I came from. And I didn't realize how much that I carried that until my boys grew up, till being around you guys, allowing my husband to receive like his love and his tenderness. And so it's interesting that at this stage of life, I think I have felt the safety for the first time that I don't have to guard and protect.
Yeah. Yeah. So men were authoritative. Men were angry. Men were violent. You had to earn men's acceptance. And the default was one of rejection. And so...
And aggression. Yes.
And so you growing up for the better part of your life, God had those were the attributes of God that you carried. Yeah. God was mean. God was aggressive. The default wasn't acceptance. The default was you have to earn your grace. You have to earn your acceptance and you better please me. It sounds like when you started working on yourself and putting together those pieces in your mind, it sounds like God served you up on a silver platter a bunch of men who can be your friends, who are safe. And maybe men were safe all along. And maybe it was just a change in your perspective. But it sounds like as you started, like I was saying earlier about our stories, connecting the dots of our stories and realizing why we are the way we are, why we believe the things that we believe in the context of this podcast, why we believe the things about God. It sounds like when we start connecting those dots and putting the pieces together, we're giving God permission to expand and we're giving God permission to grow bigger. And in my experience, and it sounds, I don't put words in your mouth, it sounds like in your experience, every time we allow God to expand, it expands in a more beautiful direction. God becomes less petty. God becomes less objectionable and less judgmental and less small and less aggressive. And I just think it's beautiful how you've done the hard work. And I know you have an awesome husband, by the way, which I'm going to put a pin in what I was saying just to say, you were telling me how you and Kyle learn a lot from me. I learn a lot from watching your guys' interactions. And that's a goal. I walk away thinking if I can have that type of respectful, loving, fun relationship that you and Kyle have, it seems like an equal relationship. It's very beautiful, and it's just something I aspire to have one day myself. And I just want to say that I think God just gave you an awesome husband who seems perfectly poised to help heal some of your past.
It's amazing to me that at 17 that I was attracted to this man that had attributes that I had no idea would like be balms to my soul, like healing balms to my soul. And I also have to say, you know, as my children, as they're older young adults, one married, one in a serious relationship, one looking for the perfect match, they look at our relationship in some ways as a role model marriage. But what they don't know is that we've been through some pretty tough patches. And there was a time when it felt like we didn't have the energy the ability to move forward together. And thank goodness my husband looked at me and goes, there has to be something we can do. And it was that point of desperation, because he has a personality. You work hard, you move forward. There's things to do. There's progression to make. There's money to make. He has such a desire to make this world a better place that to slow down and address any kind of issue that concerns him feels selfish. Mm-hmm. But until our marriage was hurting, that we were losing that connection, I laugh to avoid tears, that we were losing that connection, did he become desperate and say, what can we do? And we did. We went to a marriage intensive. We broke down some walls, and I saw a part of him that I've never seen. I'm sure he's seen a part of me that he's never seen. And it surprised me. It wowed me and surprised me, both of us. And so we learned how to have a new conversation. We've been conversing our whole life, but it feels like, but since 17. But we learned how to have a new conversation. And I think that you and I coming together and sitting with people, sitting with one another, is helping to walk people through a new conversation. And that is worthy in this life to, and where we are in this world, to figure out the new conversation for a new perspective and a way to approach life that's honorable to ourselves, honorable to our relationships, honorable to our purpose, and benefiting the future generations. And that's really what inspires me, benefiting the future generations in a way to have a world that feels safe to them, supportive of them, that is more connected, compassionate. Mm-hmm. That to me is the whole purpose. The whole purpose is to heal. When my oldest, I have twins, when they were 10, mm-hmm. I then realized my maturity level was that of a 10-year-old, because they were now testing my boundaries, mm-hmm. and it pushed me to limits. I had asked my husband at that time if we could go to counseling. Now they're 24, so that was 14 years ago. And I said, I just feel like I have broken DNA. I had come from my biological father having a mental illness. We'll go more into that, addiction. I thought this would be a mental illness that I was going to pass on in some way. I didn't know how. And I'm like, my DNA is broken. And I looked at my husband and his life, and I just saw that it was so perfect. And so I felt like I was tainting him. Mm-hmm. And we had gone to the counselor, and I'm thinking we're doing marriage counselor. And the counselor looks at me and goes, I can help you. And I'm like, what? we're supposed to do this together. But he had taught me so many things in that time about who I was, and helping me to see the truth of me, and getting some clarity of the family situation, what I grew up in. And I just tend to minimize it. I'm like, I'm a tough girl. I've made it. I've gone through life thus far. Why should I have to address anything? But when he helped me see myself, it was addicting, because then the more I saw me, the more I saw everyone else. The more that I knew where I was believing a lie and bringing that into our relationship, the more I was able to have compassion for myself, be a friend to myself, mm-hmm. and therefore be a compassionate presence for my husband. And our relationship flourished and grew, and it continues until we're called to another stumbling block, and then we've need an intervention to grow the next step. And those interventions are not easy. You don't usually want to do it, because it's disruptive to life. It's costly in finances. It's costly in your time, your emotional energy. It's like you feel like you have to pause life. It just like we did when we did our marriage intensive. It was a big decision to do that.
Because you keep thinking, because I notice this pattern in my own life. At some point, you just want to arrive.
It's true. It's like, you want to get there. I have not got there yet.
I'm not there yet.
I'm a decade older than you, and I'm going to tell you I'm still on the journey.
If you have it figured out, it's not God. If you have it figured out, it's not God. I love exploring. I love allowing God to grow bigger. And every time he does grow, it always is in more loving and more accepting, more understanding. God's not so petty, and God's not so judgmental, and God's not so exclusive. Every time I've allowed a shift in my consciousness of who God is and allowed it to expand. The funny thing is like Christ is still there.
I believe that love is just an infinite description that I can't define, but I can only experience. And until I experience it, do I even have an inkling of what it means? There's a lot of things that can affect what we believe and how we perceive. And the love that is shared, that is spoken into us at the right time, can break some pretty thick walls. Agape love is a description that's put on God's love. I don't know that we'll ever know what it is until we do. I believe that the more love that we experience and we pursue in our human experience, the more that it expands the heavens. So to feel that what I do here matters in the heavens gives me purpose, and it keeps me wanting to move forward, and it keeps me wanting to be with people that want to learn how to love more.
It's okay to arrive just as who you are in this moment. Thank you all for checking out the Love and Stardust podcast. This whole idea for this podcast came from just a group of friends who got together and realized the freedom that comes with just being vulnerable. There's parts of ourselves that we're afraid to show other people, and there's parts of ourselves that we're afraid to even show ourselves. But man, what a gift and what freedom we've experienced. We're all products of our story, and we're all products of our past experiences. I did 8 years in the Marine Corps infantry. Once a Marine, always a Marine. I'm a professor. I've written before. I'm the director of a prison ministry.
I'm excited for whoever listens to this to hear your stories, because of the life you lived before that. You have experienced something that very few of us can relate to, something so painful.
If you go back to my story, you'll learn that my introduction to God was via a petty, narcissistic person. My mom had caught wind that there was a new church plant in Nashua, New Hampshire. She moved us from Oklahoma. It was like a slow transition from this Bible-believing church into where it eventually led. And if I wasn't describing a cult before, I'm describing a cult now.